This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from BFM 89.9. I'm Meera Sivasudhi. Now, after 8 years on the air, we're bringing the Bigger Pictures Health and Living to you, live, on the ground. A whole day with the experts, debunking myths behind heart disease and diabetes, addressing our love affair with food. Of course, George will be there talking about sperm. So join us at BFM's Health and Living Live 2016 on Saturday, 2nd of April. Go on and register at bfm.my/health.
We have today on The Breakfast Grill, Securities Commission Chairman Dato Sri Ranjit Ajit Singh. Now, the SEA, as it is affectionately known, or not affectionately known, depending on which side of the law you are, is there to safeguard the integrity of the capital markets, to protect the interests of both investors and those seeking money from investors, and to create a level playing field in our capital markets. Today, we're going to explore whether the role of the SE has made governance standards and, by extension, made our lives better. Dato Sri, welcome to the show. Now, we know that the SE released its annual report yesterday. Was 2015 a better year for you than 2014?
Hello, Julian, and thank you for having me on the show. I think, clearly, 2015 was a very challenging year for emerging markets globally. And the markets were affected by many factors, as we know, the commodity price effects, the effects around the decline in growth in the major economies, as well as the consequential impact on the currencies, and the uncertainty around the path of Fed tightening dominated emerging markets, and Malaysia was equally affected.
How does that translate into what you do? Because let's say the theoretical understanding is that you are kind of above that and you're insulated from global price movement. Does the challenging market environment make your job a lot harder?
I think the key thing that we saw was that the Malaysian market was resilient. And we saw the resilience because we saw the fact that despite a decline of 17% in the emerging markets, our market was down 3.9%. We had growth in fundraising. We had another year of $90 billion worth of capital being raised. And that's very important, Julian, because the role of the capital market ultimately is about, as you said, preserving the confidence for capital formation to take place. So last year, we had $90 billion worth of capital raised. We had growth in our asset management industry went up to 6% up, and the bond markets grew. So overall, what was heartening to see is despite the volatility in global markets and despite some of the impact that played out, the Malaysian market continued to grow and demonstrated resilience. And I think that's a very important aspect of what the thrust of what we do is about, to create the architecture, the institutional structure, and the market foundations to allow the capital market to enable economic growth to take place.
Now, there are a few factors that result in the kind of turbulence that we saw in the markets last year. I mean, these factors don't explain everything, but some of them have crept up at least into the lexicon and the imagination of traders, investors, not only in Malaysia, but worldwide. One of them is 1MDB and EDRA. What is the scope of the powers of the Securities Commission? Is it an independent body? And have you presently and in the past acted in a way, you know, that acts without fear and favour?
Well, the SE's role in the capital markets actually is twofold. We are both the regulator and the developer of the capital markets. So in terms of regulation, our objectives are very clear. We're there to protect investors, obviously to ensure that there is the integrity of the markets. We do that through our work on surveillance and what have you, and to ensure that the markets have systemic stability. These are the three core thrusts of what we do. And it is important in that context for people to appreciate that we are dictated by the jurisdiction that we cover, and which is very clearly defined in our statute. Now, in terms of independence, clearly the same point, Julian. The SE's independence is enshrined within our governing legislation. And the governing legislation stipulates very clearly our governance structure, the processes, the accountabilities that we have to Parliament. And of course, one very important part is our funding models, which are also independent. And as a consequence, it allows us to discharge our roles and responsibilities to serve the public interest, but as mandated by the law. And our framework, Julian, has been tested by the IMF and World Bank very recently. And they test, among others, you know, how you discharge your functions, independence, etc. And that rating was about 92%, which till today remains one of the highest in terms of capital markets being rated. So that's how we operate, actually.
So the SC actually asked EDRA Energy, which is a subsidiary, of course, under 1MDB, to resubmit its IPO plans. What was the story behind that and why that listing did not see a clear path?
Well, that position is not quite correct. The position in respect of the developments with that was, of course, EDRA had asked us to let it revise, update, and resubmit its application. They wanted to do it, and we allowed this. And however, subsequently, as they themselves decided to pursue another path, and this is, of course, public knowledge, and that's all. So it was their decision to pursue the other path.
On The Breakfast Grill this morning is Dato Sri Ranjit Ajit Singh, the chairman of the Securities Commission. Now, Chairman Ranjit, there is a perception, maybe it's something that has arisen from the past, that the SC approves or rejects certain deals. What is your stance on this? I mean, how far would you go in reducing risk for investors?
Well, I think our approach is very clear. And we are concerned about ensuring that investors have the right information to be able to be allowed to make informed decision making. And when we feel that that information disclosure is inadequate, then we will insist on more disclosures being put forward to investors. That's a thrust, actually, Julian, of how we approach it. And therefore, over the years, of course, we've taken a position of very much focusing on the quality of disclosure, the role of advisors, and ensuring that investors, are able to make the right decisions. And that is generally how, you know, we've approached it. Of course, if we see the review very, you know, strong corporate governance issues coming in, the rules are very clear. Those are the kind of concerns that then we would act, in the interest of investors and not allow the listings to take place. But by and large, the thrust of what we do is around ensuring there is better quality disclosure for informed decision making to occur. And it is also extremely important here that the role of the advisors is imperative. The advisors must play a role as gatekeepers. They must do their own due diligence. They must do their own work in ensuring that the kind of issuers they bring to the market meet those standards, actually.
Chairman Ranjit, we were discussing what would generally be called a kind of disclosure-based regime where investors would have to take their own risk rather than, I suppose, being handheld by the Securities Commission. Now, something very interesting happened at the end of this 2013. The SC made some changes and updates to the SPAC structure. And the SPACs are special purpose acquisition companies which have been given money through IPO to look for the so-called qualifying assets, given a certain time limit to do this. And the changes that were made involved tying promoters basically to have more skin in the game, having moratorium for mineral and oil and gas SPACs, and also limited the use of IPO money for management salaries, as well as the requirement to put 90% of IPO money into trust. Why did you see the need to do this?
Well, Julian, first of all, the SPACs, as you know, are a category of investment structures that we put out there that does not necessarily exist in all jurisdictions. And therefore, when we introduced the SPACs, we discussed it obviously with the industry. And when this was introduced, it was with a viewpoint to be able to expand the range of investment opportunities that were available to investors and to allow aggregation of companies and through M&As. Now, SPACs are unique. They bring together those with skills and experience to create value with those that provide the capital. And the idea was to provide an affordable alternative to private equity investment. Now, you talked about the framework. Now, the framework that we developed for SPEC was done in consultation with industry, looking at global experience and looking at the structure in the context of Malaysia. We always look at it in the structure of in the context of the country. And in doing that, the framework was in place. And in at that period of time, based on feedback and our assessments, there was a need to be able to refine. That's what regulation must be about. It must be context specific. It must allow some degree of flexibility where that needs to be an easing or tightening that must occur. Having said that, the crux of the structure really is about the skills and experience of the team that brings us back to the market. And the really important point that I mentioned before is the role of the advisors so that they exercise the right due diligence to ensure that they only bring in entities with strong management teams and robust strategies to the market. And as far as investors are concerned, they must be assured that there is the ability to be able to create that value. There must be regulatory certainty in terms of the period, and there must also be the certainty that there is the portion of funds which are placed under trust. So these are the principles with which the framework operates. And the framework, as I said, is how we see currently the spec structure taking on.
These are the rules of the game, so to speak, and you've got to abide by these rules if you want to play that game. But there had been instances of one or two specs that were rejected. I think Terragali is one of them, a mining spec, as well as some palm oil specs that were rejected. What was the process in which you made your decision to show that the SC really wasn't interested in whether the deal made or lost money, but really whether these guys were sticking to the regulation?
I think it goes back to the same points that I made, Julian. When we look at these any applications that we assess on the for the specs, it's all about ensuring that they meet all aspects of the regulatory framework, and therefore, because investors are participating with a view that the framework would be applied clearly in the context of any potential specs itself, it is important that we ensure that these are being met. And hence, if any decisions are made, they are typically made in the context that they are not meeting the specific requirements, either in terms of expertise or skills that are expected from the spec structure.
Now, we are going to see the first casualty of the spec structure, which is in Click Energy, because now they find themselves to be in a position where they have to return the trust money to investors because they did not manage to get a qualifying assets. And actually, the SC rejected their request to extend the time frame. Can you give us some insights into this case?
Well, actually, we don't specifically comment on the cases, Julian, so I won't do that. But let me just say, make a more general observation in the context of your question. And I think the spec structure, in our view, is very clear. It has a ability for the right people to bring in, to embark on the value creation for investors. It has a very defined tenure. It has a very very clear structure as to how the funds are placed. And
should it have been left to the vote of the shareholders?
Well, as I said before, I mean, the framework is clear. Once the framework is developed in consultation with the industry, it is the job of the regulator not to change the game midway. And you need regulatory certainty. And therefore, investors who participate in the spec have looked at the framework, they understand the rules, and they participate with those rules. The rules cannot be changed midway, and that's exactly how we operate.
But in the case of Click, was it the case that you did not allow the extension, or was it the shareholders who rejected the extension? Which role were you taking?
Well, I think, as I said, I don't want to be making specific comments in relation to corporate exercises. that have taken place, but the general approach that we have in relation to the spec itself is that the framework must be complied with. The role of the investor, the role of the promoters, very clearly defined there, and our objective is to ensure that there is regulatory certainty, and as I mentioned at the beginning, the right amount of disclosures to allow informed decision-making by shareholders.
This morning on The Breakfast Grill is Dato Sri Ranjit Ajit Singh, Chairman of the Securities Commission. We're looking into the robustness of the capital markets in Malaysia. Chairman Ranjit, of course, let's talk about the case of Repco Lau. And this is a pretty curious case because it's lasted 17 years. And the court recently made a decision that he would be fined and jailed as well. Why has it taken so long for this case to receive its correct justice?
Well, I think this market manipulation cases, by definition, are not easy, Julian. And there's a lot of work that goes into it. But having said that, in this particular instance, I think, as you are aware, there were many different aspects that were taken through the court process, but more importantly, we are encouraged by the decision. We are encouraged by the decision because it shows that there is a very strong, effort and judicial recognition that market manipulation is a serious offence, and this is really critical. It is, we have been bringing many cases, and of course, through the cases and the appeals that we bring to the higher courts, we have managed to, build a greater appreciation of the seriousness of capital market offences. And this particular decision, in our view, shows that that there is judicial recognition around this. And of course, I think this is something that is looked at across. Across regulators around the world, where they focus a great deal of effort towards ensuring that market abuse is addressed.
Now, 5 years jail and 5 million ringgit, is this high enough a deterrent? Because the systemic cost, as you can imagine, would be much, much higher.
Well, I think we believe that is important in these sort of cases is that there is a proper credible deterrence actually, and therefore custodial sentences with are important, and I think, as I said, this decision is an important recognition about the seriousness of these offences.
Does the process of investigation go into how much money the alleged offender has made in this case? I mean, this stock that has gone up through the roof over 100 ringgit and then fell back down to about 2 ringgit. 5 million, is that almost like a slap on the wrist?
Well, clearly we look at all aspects of it. And when an investigation of this nature occurs, we look at many different dimensions of what has occurred in the case of market manipulation or insider trading or any form of market abuse, actually, Julian. But at the same time, the provisions of the relevant statutes are very clear. And in this case, it is about a minimum fine of 1 million and imprisonment not exceeding 10 years. And, it is a decision for the judiciary to be able to make the right sort of outcomes.
Now, the Securities Industry Act highlights a litany of all these market offences. Section 84, false trading, market rigging. Section 85, stock market manipulations. You have false and misleading statements, fraud, manipulation, and so on. And forget that this act was enacted in 1983. That's 33 years ago, amended many times, of course. But these crimes are as old as they are serious. Has the market become a lot more efficient since 33 years ago?
Well, I think clearly the market has become more efficient, Julian. We would hope that over the years, all the efforts that have been put in have strengthened the market. The SC, of course, is 20 years old.
Yeah, but you hear of these words in the lexicon, right? Oh, this guy is going to push up that stock, or that syndicate is involved in this stock. And these are pockets of the market which are quite shady. Why are these words still in our lexicon?
I think the key thing is that we have to work together, both the regulator, the market operator, in this case, the stock exchange, as well as the broker-dealers, actually, to be able to put an effort to ensure that we preserve the integrity and the trust and confidence in our market. This is absolutely critical, Julian. And this is something that has to be done, you know, as I said, it's a shared responsibility. It is about creating the effort to ensure that investors are able to go in there, be assured that there is a right, you know, a price discovery process take place, and be able to ensure that there is integrity in the markets. So your question, really, which is a very, very pertinent question, is about, you know, over the years, you know, have we, what has happened? And my sense is two things, frankly. The first thing is that we have really strengthened our surveillance systems. And we put in a lot of investments into building sophisticated surveillance systems, both at the regulator level as well as exchange level. And that has allowed us to be able to take on much greater effort in terms of effective surveillance. And as a consequence, our enforcement actions following on from that. Now, on the other side of things, of course, is that the markets have become extremely complex and very, very demanding. 20 years ago, for example, our enforcement teams would be looking at a market manipulation case where there's one account. Right. Today, there are 200 accounts, and they cover, you know, across jurisdictions, you know, and much, a lot of layering, etc. So there is a, you know, so the complexity has certainly become a lot more. But, you know, the key point is that you have to send a very strong, make a strong effort to ensure that there is credible deterrence against anyone who tries to abuse the markets.
This complexity of the market that you're talking about, I mean, today we are faced with all these very complex products, derivatives and so on. And in fact, when we had short selling some time back, it was banned for a while. And I think right now it's allowed based on a regulated basis. What is the next direction for the SEC? Is the SEC on the side of more complexity of the market, or are you shying away from this kind of thing? Which, as the financial crisis has shown, a lot of commentators have said that these are actually not very useful products for a market. I mean, the derivatives don't really do anything for the economy.
Well, I think, you know, I certainly don't agree with you on derivatives don't do anything for the economy. That
okay,
I don't agree
fair
with.
Enough.
You know, I think derivatives have a role. And I think, as with all products, you know, that are introduced in the capital market, as long as they serve their purpose and they're not abused, then there's certainly a role for them to take on board. The key thing, capital markets are by their very nature markets for risk. Our role as a regulator, and you asked this thing before, Julian, our role as a regulator is to ensure that there is informed decision-making occurring. We're not preventing people from taking risk. You know, people have different risk appetites. It is important that people make the right decision based on their risk appetite. Now, clearly, those who want to take on, you know, very plain vanilla investments, our capital market allows them to do that. Those who want to take on more sort of, you know, who have a higher degree of risk appetite should be able to do that as well. Now, in the context of, you know, complexity, I think it is really, you know, our position is very clear. Our role is to broaden and deepen the capital market. We're not seeking to make it more complex. We certainly are not doing that. The intention is to make the markets broader, deeper, to give investors more choice, and really to allow informed decision-making to occur.
This morning on The Breakfast Grill is Securities Commission Chairman Dato Sri Ranjit Ajit Singh. Stay tuned, we'll be back with more after this.
You're still here. Good. Now, if you're listening to this podcast while on the treadmill, you're already off to a good start. If you're not, don't forget to join us at BFM's Health and Living Live 2016 on the 2nd of April. Find out how you can live a better, healthier life. Go on and register at bfm.my/health.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning is Dato Sri Ranjit Ajit Singh, who's the chairman of the Securities Commission. Now, based on our conversation earlier about derivatives, actually, those are not only my personal words about whether derivatives have any use for the economy. I mean, we interviewed actually Lord Adair Turner, who was the chairman of the Financial Services Authority, and he expressed the opinion that derivatives cause actually a lot more volatility than is desired by the markets, and it does lead to a kind of bubble situation. And I just want to relate this to the idea of investor protection. And right now, the markets are beginning to become more and more institutionalized. That means we are having more professional investors to invest on our behalf, and that means a lot of investment products are flooding the market. And the costs are very high because you've got to pay the agents. Is there within the agenda of the SC to actually bring down investing costs?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, let me just pick up on your point about Adair. I mean, I know Adair Turner very well. And I think, you know, I think clearly, as we've mentioned before, the general thrust with everything is that you need to be able to ensure that there are orderly market conditions. And it, when the markets begin to reach that level of that you saw in the West during the global financial crisis, then I am not surprised that, you know, those financial regulators take that particular view, which they should have taken even earlier, actually. Coming back to your question, Julian.
Before we go on to that, what does the SC view about the environment of extreme volatility in the market, and how are you going to expose Malaysian investors and also issuers to that kind of volatility?
I think there are two dimensions to this. First of all, speculation is something that is part and parcel of the market. It's the question really is when you get into a level of excessive or, you know, as you said, extreme volatility. And again, the provisions are very clear in the mandates of both the regulator and the market operator that you want to focus on orderly market conditions. And this is important, Julian, because you've also seen in instances where markets have really shot up very significantly, the fall becomes very significant as well and very painful. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it is really important that there is, you know, a view taken by the regulator and the market operator to ensure that there are orderly market conditions. Volatility is part and parcel of markets, but to focus on orderly market conditions are imperative, and that's really where the focus is. And where you see there is an asymmetry in information being made available to investors, it is important that you address that. That's our position, really.
Okay, going back to investor protection and the costs of going into investment products, we're talking about agency costs, 3-5% sales commission. We're talking about 1.5-2% management fee a year for unit trust, and that's a substantial proportion of expected returns per annum, right? I mean, the KLCI returned 7-8% per annum for the last 10, 20 years. So is it fair to pay such costs?
Well, I think, you know, we are always looking at the overall cost in the capital markets. We clearly would like that cost to be reflective of the sort of value and services that the consumers obtain. Now, in the context of the unit trust industry, we certainly are aware of the feedback and as you have alluded to, you know, the cost structures in relation to you know, what the industry is at today. Our view is that this has to be looked at more closely. And we do not intervene on costs specifically, Julian, but we do believe that constructive competition, alternative channels, you know, for investors to access investment products, if they want to pay for value-added services, then they should be able to do that. If they do not want to, there must be alternative channels available. And therefore, we believe that these structures must be in place. We are currently in the process of finalizing a review that we've embarked on, Julian. in this segment. We will be discussing this with the industry. It's with the inputs of the industry. We'll be discussing it very soon. And I personally would like to be able to make public some of the findings from that review so that investors have a much wider understanding and they're able to make the right decisions.
Mm-hmm. I think that is key because I'm just wondering whether you'll go the way of putting labels on cigarette boxes, right? Smoking causes cancer. Smoking is harmful to your health. I mean, if you buy into a risky product, that could be harmful to your short-term investment objectives, or you could be paying excessively for certain financial products. In what way would you give investors more information?
I think as I mentioned before, we have over the years focused on ensuring that investors have the right amount of information to make the right decisions.
But many of them are still ignorant today. They think they go into the market as though these products are sure things.
Yeah. Well, this is where it's a shared responsibility, though. I think, you know, we are at pains to emphasize to investors that you must do your homework as well. I mean, you know, in many ways, as many global regulators share my view as well, I mean, you know, the best protected investor is an informed investor. And therefore, you know, we certainly have taken on a lot of effort. Our InvestSmart initiative is wide-ranging, Julian. You know, we put in all sorts of efforts to be able to be to address the very different spectrum of investors out there. We know that they have different varying degrees of understanding of markets, some quite sophisticated, even on the retail side, and others, of course, at a very different spectrum. But the key thing is there's a lot of information out there. You know, we have an initiative called SC in the Community, which we go across the nation to be able to engage investors. We have, you know, had product highlight sheets. You know, we've talked about sales practices. We've talked about doing the right thing as far as investors are concerned for intermediaries. So the idea really is to be able to ensure that there's enough information out there. We've also, you know, set up, as you know, dispute resolution mechanisms to our SIDREC, etc. If there are aggrieved investors, they can go there. And we also are very open to investors coming to us directly through our complaints area, as well as to engage with us. But it is important that there is a responsibility taken on by investors because sometimes, you know, for example, they're investing in unlicensed, through unlicensed firms. You can go to our website and see which are the firms that are licensed.
Mm, but obviously they wouldn't do that, right? Because, I mean, it's the marketplace. You've got to act quickly. Sometimes it's all about convenience or the path of least resistance. Now, just going back to the Financial Services Authority of the UK, back in, at the end of 2012, they actually banned commission selling of financial products. And they're making financial agents charging fees upfront and not allowing them to earn commissions from the product providers. I'm not suggesting exactly that SC follows this path, but there seems to be a sentiment that there are conflicting interests here. And I guess we really want to see a point where we align the interests of the investment provider and that of the investor.
No, I think this is an important point, and that is that, you know, you want to be able to ensure that the advisors are acting in the best interests of the investor. And this is something that we certainly are very, we've emphasized a great deal.
But how can that manifest itself?
Well, I think, you know, through a lot of the efforts that we've made, through a lot of it does come back down also to issues around conduct and culture at the levels of the firms. It is important, and this is the thing that it's very important that we emphasize. This is what we've been doing in our work, to emphasize areas of culture and conduct. Some of the market failures that you've seen happen in the West emanate from very poor governance and conduct structures. I mean, look at the whole area about rigging of the interbank market in London. I mean, you know, this is a major cause of concern in coming out in a developed market. Now, in our approach towards oversight, so we've been at pains to emphasize these points, but you know, certainly we do not see any issue appearing to that degree that requires us to take that sort of intervention that, you know, has taken elsewhere. But we monitor closely. If there is a need to be able to act, we will. But that's why I said sharing this particular work that we're nearing completion would be helpful, Julian.
Dato Sri, we were discussing investor protection earlier. There are a few other sticking points. For example, there are insufficient ETFs in Malaysia. There are insufficient index funds in Malaysia, which are really very cheap to invest into. The costs are really extremely low. But there is a sense that there isn't any efforts made to promote that kind of products. And there is a sense that the participants, the sellers of unit trusts, are operating in a very cozy environment, continue to reap the very lucrative profits of that industry. And in fact, EPF is such a captive market for them, right? When you want to buy into unit trusts, those are not even given at a discount. Correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, the market environment might have changed and they might have been given discounts, but, 3 to 5% is really very, very high to pay for some of these unit trusts. So I guess a few issues there. What are we doing for very innovative products like ETFs and index funds, as well as the emergence of robo-advisors?
Well, firstly, I think ETFs are very important. I share that with you fully. And that's why the SC had worked on introducing the framework for ETFs. And we have that framework in place. I personally would like to be able to see a lot more growth in the ETF markets. And we have asked, our staff to work closely with the stock exchange where these ETFs are listed, together with the industry, to see what more can be done. My sense is it's probably a combination of factors. I think there needs to be a lot more promotion out there. These have been very successful products in many markets.
The other thing that can be done is also to allow some of these very efficient ETFs, foreign-run ETFs, to come into the Malaysian market, because I think the local market does not have the depth to, say, carry out a global ETF efficiently, right? They don't have that network of dealers and promoters and arbitragers. And also, we talk about the ASEAN economic community, where we're going to integrate financial products. There are many products in Singapore and Hong Kong. Hong Kong is not in ASEAN, but can these products then come in and fulfill the diversity of products that we need so badly?
Well, I think we have to look at the dynamics more closely. And therefore, at the moment, as I said, we're looking at this area to see what more can be done to accelerate. Some of the points that you make may be pertinent to bring on board. Certainly, our position within ASEAN is an important one. And as you know, we have already established the ASEAN passporting regime, where there are 12 qualifying funds, and many of these funds are now available for cross-distribution in other parts of ASEAN.
So Chairman, if I can stop you there, why limit it to 12 funds if many of these funds have already been approved by their respective versions of their own securities commissions?
No, actually, they're not limiting it to 12 funds, Julian. Quite the contrary. We'd like to have as many as possible come on. I'm just telling you where we are today.
Okay.
So certainly the idea is not to limit them. The idea is to have more. And as I said, they could be ETFs. And so there is no sort of predisposition not to allow these ASEAN ETFs to occur. Quite the contrary. In fact, we were looking in the past to have an ASEAN ETF set up to promote the ASEAN asset class. But you also have to address the demand side. And therefore, the solution is not just about the products. The solution has got to be about the promotion. The solution has also got to be the market making and basically to get more participation. But from our perspective, we're on the same page. Mm-hmm.
Must widen it. I guess on the demand side, education is very much needed as well.
Yes.
And in that vein, what are we doing about financial advisory? Because really right now, the selling of financial products is really agency driven. And the kind of quality of financial advisory that comes out of that may not be actually up to par. What's happening with that front, and what's happening with, for instance, that single licensing regime where licenses given out by Bank Negara and SC are at par and accepted as a financial advisor?
Well, I think we've been working together with the industry to come to, to be able to promote the financial advisory, financial planning side of things. And I think there's been a lot of strides that have taken place. More can be done. My own view is that I think this is a very important segment of the market. Many investors are too busy, and they should avail themselves of the right advice. And these people are, you know, there's a lot of effort being put in to make sure the qualified people participate, and we should do that. And people should also begin to be able to pay for, you know, advice. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, we both SC and Bank Liga are working very closely in this area. And as I said, a lot of efforts have been put in, a lot of strides have been done. You talked about things like the development of robo-advisors. I mean, these are innovations that are also appearing in the landscape. We are open to it. We are looking at, you know, financial technology, as you know, Julian. You know, BFM have worked with us on some of the events, and thank you very much for that. But, you know, it's very exciting areas. Our belief, it's all about solutions, actually. Mm-hmm. Any solution that helps the capital markets, any solution that helps promote more better investment decision making, better outcomes for investors, we are open to. And we think that the whole thrust of financial technology is offering a very interesting dimension for greater inclusiveness, lower cost, actually, and better accessibility for investors. And so SC has allowed, for example, we've set up this alliance for financial technology, Affinity at SC, and we bring in tech entrepreneurs, advisors, you know, venture capitalists and what have you. And at the same time, we've created a regulatory safe harbor. And, you know, excuse me for using a regulatory jargon, but, you know, it's to create regulatory certainty to allow investors to participate and tech entrepreneurs to be able to structure some of these solutions. And as you know, we've already registered 6 equity crowdfunding platforms.
And you're a leader in this. In fact, the SC Malaysia is one of the first in ASEAN, beating even Singapore, I'm proud to say, in launching this platform. But also the question is the ways in which people get financing and to invest, yes, as well, is getting more and more innovative and complex. You know, how are we future-proofing ourselves as far as regulatory is concerned? Will we see a Uber-type situation where, you know, a chunk of people are really not very happy with the kind of innovation that's coming into the country?
Well, you know, there is a reason why they call this disruptive technology.
Yeah.
Right? It does disrupt the business models of the incumbents. Yeah. And therefore, you know, I think that there will be a certain amount of that happening. But this is constructive competition. Right. I mean, if incumbents are not efficient and not delivering quality services at the right value, then you will see a certain amount of disruption occurring. And I think it's what's happening in the financial technology area as well. So I think some of that will occur in the financial technology. It's already occurring, actually, Julian. And our approach is really one which is very clear. We will, you know, we facilitate innovation. The innovation has to be one that allows the markets to be able to provide the right solutions. It is not an easy area. And you look at the area for regulators, we create a certain amount of regulatory certainty for this, you know, innovation to operate, at the same time ensuring that there is no misconduct that creates a distortion in the marketplace. But in our view, these are exciting developments, and consumers will benefit. So we're very open to it. So one of the things that we do is what we call regulatory sandboxing. And what this allows, so for example, robo-advisors, so in this context, Julian, where, you know, you bring in robo-advisors within the regulatory sandboxing and they discuss what sort of framework should be in place. Very shortly, we'll be launching the peer-to-peer lending framework. And so, you know, we certainly think that these are the digitization of markets and innovation is the new way forward. And we are open to that.
Dato' Sri Ranjit, thank you very much for your time and wish you all the best in promoting actually fair play in the capital markets of Malaysia. And that was Dato' Sri Ranjit Ajit Singh, the chairman of the Securities Commission on this morning's Breakfast Grill. I'm Julian Ng, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.